Okay, so we're going to do kind of a new format for our podcast. Now that Angel's here in California, we're taking a walk through the California Crumble. I'm just kind of showing her around some of this stuff. And we were just having a conversation, and I really want to bring it back. Some of the things that we've been talking about in the podcast, a little longer range podcast, is that when we talk about audience, like, you have to stand true to your values, and you really have to stand true to, like, who you are, and you have to be polarizing in order to gain an audience that absolutely adores you and loves you, right? If people are going to like you, then there's people that have to hate you. And Angel was telling this really great story that I absolutely think was important to share, and that's kind of why I hit the record button. So why don't you take it away, Angel?
So I was at a show this weekend, and the artist, Macklemore, who I had never really listened to before, came out, and he was talking about Palestine and everything that's happening overseas right now. We had planes flying right over where we were, and he was just stating how lucky we are to not be afraid that those planes are gonna drop anything on us. And I thought that was a really cool thing, because it was a very risky move as an artist, and he even said that people will tell him to shut up, that, you know, just be a musician, don't get into politics. But he said it's not about politics, it's about love and equality and peace, and that everybody deserves that. And I thought that was really cool, because it was an extremely risky move, especially in such a big festival setting. But it was really cool to me to see that he did that. And like Catherine said, like, I took a video of it, because I was just like, wow, this is exactly what we're talking about. Be polarizing, be like, stick to your beliefs, because the whole crowd exploded afterwards with applause, and everybody was just all about it. And it was really cool to see that somebody would use their platform, even though it was risky, and, you know, say what they thought.
Yeah, I think something that a lot of people miss, and kind of like what you said, is that the whole stadium kind of broke out in applause. And yeah, some people would say, like, get out of here, that shit's whack, you know, and they would leave humble grumbling, right? They'd be like, can't believe he said that, like, let's get out of here, just because he did that. And the thing is now that you've weeded those people out, right, they've left because they're upset that he said that, mm-hmm. Now you have 100% of your audience's attention instead mm-hmm. of 80%. And because you got those people to leave, you no longer have people running around smack-talking you.
Yeah.
Because you got those people to leave. The people who would humble grumble about you saying that about Palestine, if you were to call something out now, they'd be like, I would never buy that because he supports ending the war or whatever. I don't actually know what the war is about. But in him saying that and getting those people out of there, you know, sure, there'll be posts on social media that'll be like, I don't support this guy because he supports ending the war. Like, no longer buy stuff from him. Their audience, like the people who share that hate on the internet, is going to see that. And they're going to be like, why is this person hating on him for wanting peace mm-hmm. or something, whatever the value is that he spoke on? And that will show other people. First of all, it'll introduce them to new people who might not know you, because they hang out with people who apparently hate you. but it has the potential to share the message and to find more audiences that like you mm-hmm. if something goes viral based off of hate.
Yeah.
Like, I just had a podcast that I did a podcast interview with Dustin from Track Days, and I had somebody in the comments just straight up leaving really nasty comments the whole stream. And the very next day I got a message from a different podcast that said, hey, I want you to come on my podcast, and I want you to tell the struggles that you have in the motorsports world as a woman.
Yeah.
Cause that's not cool. And more people need to see that it's a problem.
Yeah. Those comments were just ridiculous. And I was like, I cannot believe somebody would say stuff like that. But then again, coming from like a platform where I used to stream video games, it is very much that all over the internet. If you're a female mm-hmm. who gets into any kind of limelight, you get so many misogynistic comments. It's ridiculous. But I'm excited for you to tell your story and to talk about that in front of everybody, because it's a huge thing. And I think more women need to talk about it. Like, yeah, it sucks to bring light to it, but at the same time, women have to know that this is something that they're going to deal with, and that it's okay to lean on other women for the support, because we're all going through it.
Mm-hmm. And I think for some reason, I know I used to pretend like it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
When I was younger, when I was in the road racing world, I used to be like, no, like, that's just how they joke around. Yeah. Like, it's fine. Like, having grown men that are older than my dad commenting about how great my ass is, like, every third comment. Like, they're just giving you shit. It's how they talk. It's totally fine. And now as an adult, like, having left that because I didn't like how that felt, mm-hmm. and, like, actually reflecting on the fact that, you know, I put myself in those situations. I would have never known if I hadn't, like, switched my perspective and moved into a new community and left all that behind. And then jumping back into that podcast, it was like, oh, yeah, this is why I left. Yeah. Like, I completely forgot that that's why I left. I genuinely did. I thought I just liked dirt bikes more, and mm-hmm. I actually left because of the people. And that's, like, being able to stick to those values and bring light to that grows my audience of people who are excited for women in motorsports. Like, if you're listening to this, I know that you support women in motorsports. I know it's not just about getting paid if you're listening to this, because we've talked enough and we've been polarizing enough to, if that's what you're here for, you should have left by now. This isn't just about making money. Unfortunately, it's about growing the community and making it a better place for everyone.
Yeah.
So be polarizing, tell your story, tell the ugly bits of your story, because it's in being vulnerable and exposing something that you connect with other people on a deeper level other than the superficial, look at me, I'm so great.
And I think that's the thing, is we were talking to John the other day, and he was talking about being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it all just goes back to that. If you're not authentic, people can tell. And staying superficial, yeah, you're going to please more people. But what does it really matter, like you said, if it's not the people that you actually want to interact with? Yeah. If it's not the people you want to talk to because you like hard enduro, but maybe I like supercross. And if you're just always just talking dirt bikes and you're not saying specifically what you like, you're going to end up in conversations in areas where you don't want to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I don't know. I just think it's really important to stay true to you. And that was just a really great example in real life. And it's just funny because we, you know, I keep telling you, activations is becoming my life. I'm seeing it everywhere. Like, I was at a concert and this happened.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I actually got off a phone call with my mom after I did that podcast with Track Days. I'll link all of this below. We did an interview with John Lott, who is he's now the retired chief executive officer of Custom Chrome, which is like the biggest competitor to Parts Unlimited and Drag Specialties. And we interviewed him about signing $50,000 annual salaries to people and like why. And that whole conversation, like, I did the Track Days podcast and I felt terrible. I felt awful. Like, I didn't feel like I belong. I felt like I was torn apart, honestly, and really grilled. And, you know, the people that listened to it, it had a really big impact on people. Like, people loved it. I made so many book sales. Like, I'm so grateful for the opportunity. And I learned a lot about what I talk about. But then my mom called me shortly after that. And she goes, you know, I really don't think road racers are your audience. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just the way that they talk and the way they hold themselves. You know, coming back to that whole, like, I left road racing because of the people. Yeah, there's nice people inside of road racing, but they stick to themselves. They're not really involved in that whole Wahoo Jocko club. Like, they just aren't. And then I had that conversation with John Lott, and he was so excited about the dirt world, mm-hmm. you know. Same thing with Brian Craham. Like, all of the people I've interviewed have been really big into the off-road industry, whether it's flat track, whether it's rally car racing. We just had that really cool interview with Steve and Jake, and they were a true delight as far as talking about they wanting to grow the community. And I think the thing with it is it's so small and underappreciated, and nobody like knows it's there. So they're really dedicated to, you know, I have to drive like 4 hours in any direction in order to ride somewhere in Minnesota. Yeah, I moved to California where my backyard is a mountain, but I still have to drive 3 hours if I want to go to a race. And I think all of us experience that. I don't know any person who lives like 10 minutes away from a track to be able to ride the entire season.
Yeah.
You know, sure, you're right next to one track in a series, but then you have to drive 5 hours to get to the rest of the series or more.
Yeah.
When I did NEPG, I had to drive 16 hours was the smallest drive I had to make one way. So it's like, we're really passionate about bringing it back home.
Yeah.
And I think that that's huge, and kind of the pain points that I'm speaking on is more so for the off-road community, because it's getting taken away from us.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Moab is being taken away. Just like South Dakota is getting taken away. We're losing the Black Hills. We're losing so many BLM lands
mm-hmm.
that I think the motorsports industry is really trying to step up and preserve it. And we can't, because there's so many misconceptions that we need to bring light to. So I think we're all really passionate about growing it. And that's part of that whole sticking to the values. Don't talk to everybody. I used to just say motorsport athletes and moto entrepreneurs. Like, that's not... I teach an entrepreneur mindset. I want you to think outside of yourself. But I don't want to be talking to the people who just want to win, win, win. And I don't want to talk to the people who are just so focused on lessening the pain of them going racing. You know, anything helps. If you say anything helps, we can't work together. Because you're not thinking the right way.
Yeah, there's no passion for helping the community. And that's not something that I think that you're willing to invest your time in, nor should you. I think that, you know, you have a very focused audience. And I think that that's a good thing, because those are the kind of people that we talk to and we hang out with all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's everybody that we are around and we like. So I think that it's good to kind of even just narrow it even more. It's not just the motorsports athletes. It's more narrow than that. So
yeah, it's the off-road community that wants to just be themselves, I guess. Be able to grow it. I still got to work on it. I still don't even know what to say that I do. We're just getting closer to the answer.
I think this kind of goes back to, you know, there's people out there who've said, like, oh, it's a scam because you're making $7 or whatever, you know, but I think that, you know, narrowing the focus of who you're talking to even more means, quote unquote, less sales, right?
Yeah.
So it means less people that you have potentially giving you money. And I think that that just shows how unselfish this really is. Like, you really, yeah, I mean, you're going to make a little bit of money off of it. So, like, full transparency, but you're not going to be a millionaire because you're not out there going after, like, every single person on a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's, it really is a testament to you and your passion.
Well,
to narrow it.
And here's the deal. And I know we talked about this with Steve. I'm going to end up chopping this into two different podcasts. We're going to stick to the 10 to 15 minutes. Maybe this will stay one, but here's the deal. When it comes to running businesses, it costs money to help people.
Yep.
And that's the thing that a lot of people miss. Like, well, yeah, I'm selling my course for $7. Well, I actually don't sell that course anymore, but yeah, my book is $9.99, right? It's free plus shipping. I could charge $25 for it, but I want you to have the resources. There's a free membership site. It's just $37 a month. Well, why is it so low? Like, if it's that low, you might as well just make it free. And it's like, well, I spent $25,000 to get an interview with John Law.
Yep.
Not directly, right?
Yeah.
I entered a coaching program, and that coaching program, one of the perks of that coaching program is being able to network. And so that's how I met John Lott, was through a $25,000 coaching program.
Yeah.
I've spent 7 years studying different sides of marketing and paying coaches. All together, I think I've spent $50,000. I think I've spent the equivalent of my college tuition in marketing education outside of college.
Yeah.
You know, not including the fact that I spent 3 years inside of the printing, branding, and marketing industry. So it's not that, yeah, I make $7 when you buy an online course that took me a week to make, but what you're paying me for is so that you don't have to spend that $50,000 and 7 years worth of time to get that education and find that networking to get those answers. Like, you're paying me for my network.
And the knowledge compressed, essentially. So, like, your blueprint, essentially, because you went through and you figured everything out and you've put it all together. And I think that that's really important, too, because a lot of people either can't or won't take that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because of whatever's going on in life. They've got 5 kids or, you know, whatever the deal is. But I think that that's also really important. Like, they're paying you for your pain, essentially, that you went through to get them this product. And I think that that's also really important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to do a super quick secondary start because I realized after we just recorded the podcast, you need to make money to help people. I realized we didn't even talk about how I actually help people with money and like real life examples. So I'm going to post up this interview with Steve, but his whole deal is like he wants to host drift events that are close by to him so that he can grow the community and have more people to race with and compete with. And the thing is like in order to host those events, you have to schmooze with the government people. You have to have the time to be able to do that. So you can't be working like a normal job if you want to schmooze the government people because they only work during normal hours sometimes. You have to know the DNR people. So you have to get licensing for that. You have to actually have functioning equipment. You have to have professionals. You have to have gone to training yourself. You have to have the equipment to be able to help other people, right? If they come to your events, I don't know about you, Angel, but when people come to my clinics, there's always somebody breaks something. So we have to have the backups at the ready. You know, we have people who are trained to be able to work on bikes and people who have all of the tools and all of the parts. And like, yeah, sure, somebody else has those parts, but we have to pay those people to be there. Mm-hmm. We have to pay for an EMTB or the certification to get an EMTB. We have to pay for certifications to be able to coach. We have to pay for the insurance to host the events.
Yep.
In order to grow the community. Yeah. Okay. So that's all selfish need, right? That's to build the business.
Pay us.
Well, yeah, we have to pay us.
we need to live.
That's the other thing. A lot of people, we get slack on our coaching business because we charge $289, and then we tell people we have 5 coaches that we pay for every clinic. You only see 2 or 3 of them, but there are 5 coaches we have to pay every clinic because the mechanic is a coach. Sam is our coach. Ben, the wingman, is our coach. He's a scouter, driver, like editor, all of that stuff. Nick, we have to pay for his 20 years worth of hard enduro expertise. We have to pay Angel for your media and networking expertise. And then we have to pay me to freaking run the whole circus. Like, so yeah, we have 5 people we have to pay with every clinic, even though you only see 2 or 3 people and the rest are volunteers. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness they're volunteers. Otherwise, we'd be out of business.
Yeah.
But then, okay, let's talk about growing the community instead. Next year, we're hosting a hard enduro. Mm-hmm. It costs $5,000 to get the transponders to run that event.
That's just the transponders.
Then we have to incentivize enough people to come work the event, right? Because there's going to be like 20 checks.
Yeah.
We have to make sure there's enough people to see that people aren't cutting the course and doing all that stuff. Okay. Then we have to pay the vendors. Mm-hmm. We have to get race trophies. We have to do awards. Yeah. Okay. Let's make it schmoozy. No awards. We have to count by hand. I can't guarantee that people are going to keep time by hand.
Yeah.
Like, so then I would have to go find scorekeepers who have experience tallying enduros by hand.
Yep.
How many people count enduros by hand anymore? I only know D23 does hand-scored enduros. Mm-hmm. And there are 2 people, and they have to constantly run them from check to check. Like, the reason there's so much time between checks is because people have to finish the first check before they can start the third check because they have to ferry that person back. Because there's not enough people to run that event, okay? Mm-hmm. So now we have to incentivize enough people. Then we have to pay for the training for those people, the safety training, the wilderness certifications to be able to extract people out of the woods. We have to have the ambulance on site. We have to have the fire department on site. We have to have the DNR approve the event. Or if it's on private land, we got to pay all the landowners for the adjoining land, not even the land we're using, but we have to pay them off so they don't report us to the cops for noise complaints. Be like, hey, we're going to be running this race. It's going to be super dusty. We're really sorry. Like, please don't be mad at us. Well, if you do it, I'm going to call the cops. Fine. How much do you want so that you don't call the cops? Like, there's so much hidden stuff, right? Let's say the entire staff is volunteers. Chris has been out there for 2 years cutting trail.
Yeah.
And he hasn't seen a dime.
Yeah.
Not a crazy dime. And then I have to be AMA sanctioned to be able to run the event.
Yep.
And then we have to advertise.
Yep.
Let's say we do 100% word of mouth. 50 people show up. That's at, what, $100 a registration? Okay. We make $5,000. I paid the transponders.
Yeah.
What about the insurance? What about the certifications? What about the staff? What about the medics? What about, like, there's so much that goes into that that people don't think about. And then, okay, let's take it a step further. We are growing the national base because we just became the title sponsors for Battle of the Goats. That was $12,000.
Yep.
$12,000 to just show up. But we're really excited about it. Why? Yeah. Because we get to make sure that the event is happening. You know, they were talking about how they were struggling to find a title sponsor this year. Their title sponsor dropped out. And they didn't know if they were going to be able to, like, run the event. basically.
Which is crazy. Like, you would think that, like, it being somebody who's new to all of this, like, I would think that they're established and, like, you know, that they got this. But it's really crazy that that's not where U.S. hard enduro is. U.S. hard enduro doesn't have the same, like, prestige, I guess, as everything does overseas. Mm-hmm. So it's not as sponsored and everything, and it's not in the limelight like everything else.
And so let's talk about this. Why isn't it in the limelight? Because they're asking for such low money.
Yeah.
Because they said $10,000 to $20,000 for a title sponsorship. What do you think they would have done with $20,000 instead of $12,000? They could have gotten media. They could have gotten all of that stuff. So let's talk about it, right? So if you're all scared and woe was me for asking for money, right? Who am I to ask people to pay me money? You can host the biggest and baddest event and get the most amount of eyeballs on it, the most amount of media coverage, the most amount of television, airtime. Money talks. If you want to grow the sport and you want to get people to see that it's possible, we were just talking to Steve. Apparently, you can get into drift car racing for just $3,000.
Which is insane.
I would have never, never, ever, ever guessed that. But unless he has the money to be able to speak that out to the world, yeah, he can tell his friends and family about it. But if he doesn't have the money to promote it, to get it out there, then he has to sacrifice time to build those connections. It can take up to 7 years. Look at me. To have 7 years to be able to build the network you need to make it happen. And then what? Then the idea is come and gone.
Yeah.
Right? And you're no longer excited about it. You're no longer passionate about it. So it costs money to help people. If you want to grow the community, it costs money. And I can't express that enough. And we need to stop being penny pinchers in this world. Like, I get it. It's unstable and it's woe is me, right? Like, I can't even afford a house. How can I get a dirt bike? But I used to look at it as like a race weekend road racing costs $10,000 a weekend. And at that point, like, I might as well be doing everything I can. And I remember I had a high school girl. She came up to me and we had the same trainer. Her parents were paying the $100 a month and I was paying my trainer $400 a month. She's like, why on earth would you pay him $400 a month? And the trainer looked at her and he goes, well, think about it. In the grand scheme of things, if she's paying $10,000, what is 400?
Yeah. That's like nothing.
Like, what could she possibly put $400 into that isn't herself?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing worth value.
And this goes back to what we've talked about before, like talking about putting money into yourself and like really taking a chance on yourself is huge. And a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people will put money into their house and their car and whatever. But is that really going into furthering you and yourself, mm-hmm. your skills in life, or the things that you want to be doing? I put my money into these clinics because riding is what I knew makes me happy. And it was in a time where I was not happy at all. And I needed happy in my life. So I put money into these clinics and it changed my entire life. Like, completely 180'd my life. And from the first clinic, from that very first clinic, I did, you know, I was on my bike in that setting and already I had more confidence. But the second my front wheel came up off the ground,
yes!
I was like, I can do this.
That was such a cool moment.
Oh my God. It was cool for you. It was amazing for me. I was just like, oh my God, this is what I need my life to be. And ever since that moment when that front wheel came up,
Angel did a wheelie on a TTR 125.
Yeah, and I had never done it before. And that moment that my wheel came up, it hadn't even touched down yet. And I was like, I need to figure out how I can do this more often and, like, mm-hmm. honestly, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I had a conversation with somebody in August where I was telling them that my 5-year plan was to get on the road and to just travel and ride and just be a part of the community everywhere. And I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I was going to make it happen in the next 5 years.
Yes.
And he told me that I could totally do it. And I was like, at that point, I had not spoken those words out loud yet. And I was just like, oh yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll get right on that. It's going to actually happen, whatever. And then what is that? 6-7 months ago.
Yeah.
And now here I am, and that's what I'm doing. And like, it's incredible what happens when you invest in yourself and
the people you'll meet and the things that you hear. Yeah, even
it's absolutely incredible. Just even just in confidence. Mm-hmm. If it was even just the confidence that I got out of all of that, that would have been worth it right there. And I don't think enough people do that, because a lot of times people, when they invest in themselves, any kind of coaching, whether it's clinics, whether it's marketing, whether it's anything. I have a friend who's doing all these, women's empowerment coachings.
Nice.
Because she went through this really hard time in her life, and she's going to these events and it is changing her. I am watching her grow into this amazing person and this strong, confident woman. And it's so fantastic. But 9 times out of 10, the people who are doing that are people who are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Those are the only people willing to invest that money, because everybody else, it's, I need to put money into my material things, mm-hmm. which is fine. I mean, a lot of us do. Technically, dirt bikes are material, mm-hmm. but you know, it's also, you need to build you. And
it comes back to that day old conversation where it goes, are you going to spend $10,000 to build your bike into something it's not? Or are you going to spend $10,000 in yourself for the training to do what you want to do?
We just had this conversation at the top of the hill that I know that my bike can do what I need it to do. Mm-hmm. I can modify it and I can do all these things, whatever. But until I know what I'm doing on that bike, I can put all the modifications I want into that bike. It's not going to change anything.
Yes.
And I need to be the one to be able to do it, to know what to do to handle that bike. The bike's going to make it through, mm-hmm. if it has the right rider. I need to become the right rider.
Yes.
So.
Yes. All right. On that
and
one.
There it is.
Yep. I'll plug this back in. Okay. We're done with the money talks.
Yeah.
Money talks. You need money in order to help people.
And help yourself.
There you go. And I just want to touch on something. So if you guys order the book, the whole back half is dedicated to activations. And activations are just what people do to get paid, you know, working with sponsors and how they make it all happen. And activations are really hard to understand. I was just explaining this to another girl. I wish I could read the text chat back to you guys, but I can't. But it went something along the lines of, she reached out and she was like, I've got a sponsor meeting next week. Can you help? And I just sent her the 6 chapters of my book dedicated to talking to sponsors. And I was like, do not, I know it's really tempting. Do not tell them about you. Ask them questions. Ask them what they want. And she goes, oh, well, I was just going to tell them about my trailer and my bike and then offer them spots on that. And I'm like, don't do that. Like, don't lead off with you. Ask them what they want. And she's like, okay. So then after I ask them what they want and they tell me what they want, then I'll tell them about my trailer. I'm like, no, no. Then you take what they tell you they want and you go home and you sit on it for a week. And you say, great, like, I'll write up a proposal. What time next week works well to meet? And so Hank's doing something in the car. It's cute. So after, you know, you say, like, great, I'll get you a proposal. You go home and you sit on it for a week. You've recorded the whole meeting, whether you voice memo it just like Angel and I are doing, or it was a Teams meeting and you record the whole thing. Record it. Study it. Analyze it. What did they say they want? What did they say they needed? What did they say they're struggling with? Like, what have they tried before that hasn't worked? And I guarantee you, if you ask them, what have you tried before that hasn't worked? They'll tell you logos.
Yep.
They'll tell you sponsorship. Yeah, we sponsored racers. They took the money and we never heard from them again.
Yeah.
So don't do that. But then everybody asks, well, then what do I do?
Yeah.
And that's the hang up, you know, is like, you do what the sponsor told you they want, yeah. But you do it in your audience's best interest. And that requires a lot of problem solving. That requires a lot of thinking. You know, she said she was talking to a lawyer. So I offered, like, okay, so if he needs lead acquisitions, are you going to do, you could do a fundraiser. You could do like a chili cook-off fundraiser, I say in air quotes, where people buy entries. And then on those, and that helps you raise money for your racing. They buy entries. Sorry, it doesn't help money. Back up. You could host a fundraiser And the whole point of the fundraiser is, like, do a chili cook-off contest. And then you gather that money for a racer in need, an injured racer in a crash, or somebody in the family. It happens once a year. Somebody in every single racing organization gets in a really bad crash. They get hospitalized. Doesn't matter if it was on the track or outside of the track. You know, sometimes there's a car accident. Something, mm-hmm. right? They get injured. That fundraiser is sponsored by said lawyer. That lawyer said he needed leads. So when you get entries, you get people's email addresses. In order to enter in the raffle, they need an email address. And then everybody votes on the chili. You do some giveaways. Sponsors donate a free product, whatever. That's how you get the sponsorship from the lawyer, if they wanted leads. If they just wanted exposure, yeah, logos, fine. That's whatever. But the thing that a lot of people miss is when people talk about exposure. I heard this really great. This is part of that marketing that people pay me for, right? I was taking this class. It was all about affiliate marketing. Mm-hmm. And it was all about the thing the guy was talking about is the problem is everybody thinks that they're paying for one post when they pay somebody to post about their stuff on social media shout outs. So if I wanted Angel, okay, here's a great example. I am sponsored by Hermoto. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't promote Hermoto at all. I've made one post promoting Hermoto, and that was because I had that 15% off discount or whatever, and mm-hmm. I really wanted people to check out the ProLine pant. But the thing that happens with Hermoto is they send me stuff, and then I do unboxing videos. I'm like, oh my God, look at the new colors. They're so beautiful. Ah! And not once do I say, like, go get yours at Hermoto. I'm just like, this is so nice. Look, there's no gusset in the crotch. Like, reinforced knees. They slide right over my knee braces. They don't get caught on the Velcro. The removable mesh ends right at the shorts, so it's, like, extra cool. They have this awesome detail paneling. You can actually see through the shirt, so you know they're real mesh. They're ventilated, whatever. And I just geek out about the stuff, and that's it. I never say, like, go check out Hermoto. And then a week later, I'll make a post, and I will... It'll be like a fail Friday post, right? In my Hermoto gear. And it'll be some nasty, like, tumbling down the hill, totally ate shit. And then I'll be like, look, I don't have any tears in my pants. How cool is that? Like, I've never had that before. Yeah. Genuinely. I have never had a pant that hasn't teared, that hasn't been torn until I got Hermoto.
Yeah.
And then the third post is like, hey, everybody's been asking me about my pants, mm-hmm. my Moto pants. So if you want to check it out, you can message Hermoto directly, see if they have a size that fits you, if you have any questions. Otherwise, you can just talk to me directly. And that, I had a 20% brand loyalty switch rate off of that 3 series of posts. That is exposure. Not once was I like, look at logos. I have no logos of Hermoto on my bike. Mm-hmm. None. I have none on my trailers, none on the toy haulers. There is nothing at my clinics that says Hermoto. Mm-hmm. It is just the gear that I wear.
Yep.
And that's it. There's no promotion of that. And that is how you do exposure. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have a really hard time connecting the dots between when a sponsor tells you what they want and, like, how you can make it work for you uniquely, you, and stay genuine to your audience and yourself and not add extra work. And that's what the group coaching is for. Mm-hmm. That's what the membership site is for. That's what all that stuff is for. So you can post your questions directly, like, hey, this is what the sponsor wants. This is my audience. Like, this is what I do. How do I make this work? You can post that to the community board for $37 a month, and everybody can answer that. You and I have access to the community board. Mm-hmm. Graduated students have access to the community board. Yep. Like, you can do that. And if for some reason you're like, oh, it's really hard to understand text, you can apply to join the group coaching program. And then you get weekly video calls with us and our personal phone numbers, and you can, like, call us during work hours and sort that stuff out. It's more of a hand-holding thing. But that's what you're paying for, right? It's not just $37 for my knowledge and the education and the course I've put together and sifted through all the marketing stuff, but it's the ability to problem solve together with people who have already done it mm-hmm. and gotten paid to do it. And it's such a hard concept to do on your own. It really is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, anyway, there's the end of my tangent. This is going to have to be too much self-promotion. All right. On that.
10 minutes, we said.
10 minutes. Again. we need a dad joke. Okay.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Were you prepared for this? Oh, should I end the recording anyway? No, I didn't. Oh, it's still going. Okay. Ah!
All right. Hold on. I think I've got one.
Angel's got a dad joke. Here we go.
All right. So if corals get stressed, they die. So what do corals get stressed about?
dying?
Current events.
Oh my God. That's terrible. That's terrible.
But you didn't think of it.
It's true. So on that note, if you want to check out any and all of the stuff that we've said, you can pre-order your book at www.don'tsaysponsorship.com. If you want to join the membership site, it's still don'tsaysponsorship.com/book-club. Easy peasy. That's the membership site. And then on the thank you page, after you pre-order your book or you join the membership site, you can fill out the application to join our group coaching program. Yeah. So on that, have a stellar rest of your day, and I hope this was helpful.